Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, it's great to be back on the air. I want to thank everybody for their good wishes in a couple months I was off, and know that we're back and hopefully strong as ever. One of my favorite little essays in honor of summer. Summer shines as ever. It's we who have changed, as we might say this for the last time in the season. Keep an eye on summer. That bit of lyric from the middle of an old song I've otherwise long forgotten reinsinuates itself into the atmosphere this time every year. It might as well be playing in every corner, although it's really not there. It might as well be emblazoned against the clouds like skywriting coming in soft white plumes from a sputtering biplane, although there are no words in the afternoon air. Memorial Day has come and gone, as has 4th of July, and August is halfway gone. Keep an eye on summer. Yet we seldom do. Summer is life's greatest gift to us, or at least it ought to be. It's no coincidence that there have been more songs written about summer than about all the other seasons combined. Summertime, wonderful summer, all summer long, a summer song. Summer means fun. Whatever your generation, the songwriters and singers of your era were drawn to summer seemingly as if they couldn't help themselves. Summer is everything. At least it once was when we were young. Then, when summer and life were new, summer represented freedom and friendship and an escape from the grayness of the rest of the year. Summer was not just a season. Summer was a reward, even when we hadn't done a thing to earn it. Summer was the time to breathe, to feel like someone else, to discover things about you that could never be discovered in November or February. Summer was the time when you were allowed to figure out who you were. As we grow older, we allow summer to lose that. Summer doesn't change. We do. The long days and warm nights that we used to cherish and linger over somehow become rushed and diminished because we don't pay proper attention. We have jobs now and responsibilities and deadlines to meet. There are times during the summer when, if someone were to ask us what month it is, we would have to hesitate for a second before figuring out whether it is June or July or August. Summer is a blur, or so we have permitted it to become, the one time of the year that should never be blurred, the one time of the year that should be clear and crisp and distinct every summer day, is often anything but. It's not summer's fault. It's ours. One of the wisest people I have known once said that the best things in life should be thought of as pebbles in a jar. The assumption should be that the pebbles are finite. Even if you can't count them by looking into the jar, you should assume that one day they'll run out. You should withdraw them with care, one by one, never doing it by rote or distractedly. If you withdraw them too rapidly, you're being greedy and will hasten the day when they are gone. If you hoard them, if you are miserly and keep them in the jar, then you will rob yourself of the experiences the good things should give you. There's no perfect way to do it. The closest you can come to perfection is to know just how precious those pebbles are and to value each one. So it is with summers. Here is one true thing. You have one less summer remaining in your life than you did a year ago today. This is the beginning of the middle of August. A year from now, this morning, you'll have one less summer remaining than you'll do now. That can worry you or thrill you. Choose to let it thrill. Summer is with us now. Why are we given summers? Well, probably for the reason that we are given all of life's good things, to remind us of what the rest of life does not feel like, to show us by contrast what we're missing during all those hours when things just aren't so fine. If all of life were summer, if all of our experiences were wonderful experiences, then the world would have no texture, no context. Summer, the possibility of summer, summer as we first knew it, is what it is precisely because we are aware its duration is not limitless. It would not taste the way it does if we thought it would last forever. We love it, or at least we once loved it, because we know even as it is beginning and enduring that it soon enough will be gone. That is why the last evening of summer is one of the most melancholy times of the year. The air is cooler on that September night. The shadows grow longer. There is a sadness on that night that's hard to shake. Not now, though. That's for later. It's still August. The pebbles are still in summer's jar. Yours to withdraw at your own pace. Keep an eye on summer. Savor every day. Savor every summer night. Because remember, summer is life's greatest gift to us. Or at least it ought to be. Thoughtful essay. One of my favorite summer songs from Lonnie Liston Smith, Quiet Moments. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show. Lonnie Liston Smith, Quiet Moments, the summer song. Maybe enjoy that with a little chilled Frascati or Pinot Grigio with some Fontanella, crispy Italian bread. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Looking Glass Theater Company announces an extension of 20,000 Leagues Under the Seas, adapted by David Kirzner and Alpha Slow from the books by Jules Verne, directed by ensemble member David Kirzner. Due to high ticket demand, additional dates through September 9th have been added. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea plays at Looking Glass Theater Company, located inside Chicago's historic Water Tower Waterworks, 821 North Michigan Avenue at Pearson. This marks the second and final extension of the production. When a terrifying sea monster is spotted off the coast, renowned scientist Professor Aronnax and fellow explorers set out to investigate. They soon find themselves kidnapped and held under the command and spell of the mysterious Captain Nemo. As they circle the globe aboard the most advanced submarine the world has ever seen, they confront giant squids, bizarre sea creatures, and monsters that lurk below and within. This story is the same hardcore thriller it's been for over a century. Victorian submarines, sea battles, hairbreadth escapes. On a deeper level, the story really has grown into a near parable in many ways, more resonant to our world than to the world for which it was originally intended, comments writer-director David Kirzner. Adapted from Jules Verne's epic adventure exploring the murky perils of the seas, ensemble member David Kirzner invites you to board the Nautilus and dive into this Looking Glass world premiere. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning director who has worked locally at Lyric Opera, Steppenwolf Theater, and Next Theater. David has directed and written nationally at Berklee Rep, Brooklyn Academy of Music, and LA Theater of Houston. He has taught, counseled, and mentored at such distinguished academic institutions as DePaul University, Roosevelt University, and the University of Illinois. Proud graduate of Northwestern University, director, playwright, Looking Glass Ensemble member, professor, and now directing the award-winning Chicago production of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea from the books of Jules Verne. Now playing at the Looking Glass Theater, having been extended until September 9th at the historic Water Tower Theater Waterworks, 821 North Michigan Avenue at Pearson, Mr. David Kirzner. David, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, Kev, great to be with you today.
Well, it's great to have you. And I have to tell you, David, when I was a young man, one of the most exciting movies I ever saw, and this might be a little dating myself here, Journey to the Center of the Earth. The original, and it was exciting. We used to play it, and we used to replicate it and everything else, and here we are talking about Jules Verne, who lived 100-plus years ago and still enjoying what he did.
You know, as a young kid, one of my first memories of seeing a film, now this was already in reruns, was the 54 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
1954, now think of that, 1954.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is, if there was another great thing that Disney was trying to make that year. It was called Disneyland.
Oh, really? And, same year? Okay, okay.
Yeah, and when Walt Disney, he saw the dailies, and they, on shooting day one, and the first thing they shot was the squid attack. And he was so unhappy with those dailies. Not only did he shut the film down, he shut the building of the park down. He got everybody from both campaigns to work together to rebuild the squid, to rebuild the sequence. He went 10 times over budget. Well, the rest is history.
Oh, it is. It is. It really is.
Now, for us, having to try to one-up that film, that's impossible. But Looking Glass, that's our brand. We're very good at doing the impossible, and I'm really happy with how it turned out.
Well, it turned out wonderfully, and people think the same thing, and that's why you've extended it 7 times.
Yeah. Hey, as long as people still want to come, we'll keep the doors open.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, we're thrilled. We've been working on this production for 7 years.
Really?
You know, being at the Water Tower pumping station, I was in rehearsals for another show that I was directing for Looking Glass, and my co-ensemble member Phil Smith and I were sitting there during a tech rehearsal looking around at this pumping station with all these pipes going this way and that, and thought, okay, you know, this place looks like a submarine. We should do a play about a submarine. Think of anything? And we kind of both at the same time said, well, what about 20,000 Leagues? You know, we laughed. Well, that's impossible. And then, well, here we are 7 years later.
And very successful at it. You know, it's funny. Everything starts with an idea and a conversation, and here you are having put it into practice here, and that's what's
right.
so remarkable.
Right. We've done a lot of fun contemporary updates, but it still has that feel of the 19th century, the post-industrial revolution, where, you know, Verne was, as you said, the first science fiction writer, and he was able to, during a time before electricity was fully utilized, for some of his early work even invented, and he was able to see this in his imagination. He refers to in 20,000 Leagues this new kind of energy source called electricity that would follow along electrical threads, as he puts it. And then in his unabridged version, he'll go through and we hear species after species of new fish that was just discovered. So some of this is actual fact science, though he does make some theories such as sharks turn upside down before they attack their prey, which is, as far as I know, not the case. But it's sure fun when to hear his accounts of these 20,000 leagues under the sea.
Well, that's what's most remarkable. We're talking about a man who wrote, and this doing some research, and I'm sure you do, but I certainly did the last couple of days, about Jules Verne. He's the second most translated author in the world behind Agatha Christie, but in front of Shakespeare, something I did not know. And you think of the works that he put together, of course, this is a compilation of three of his, what would he call, Voyages Extraordinaire, Journey to the Center of the Earth, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and Around the World in 80 Days, another great one that's a classic.
Right. But that Looking Glass did several years ago.
Exactly. And From the Earth to the Moon, Mysterious Island, Off on a Comet, the electricity aspect of things you're talking about. He lived during the French Revolution, Les Miserables. He lived during the time of Napoleon, yet he had this vision of all these things contemporary that we live with today before everybody else.
I think what also makes his work very readable is underneath all of the science and the epic storytelling and the fantasy, he really cared about, ethically, about the world around him. So he has early discussions of ecology. He has early discussions of socio-political relevance. In fact, his first draft of 20,000 Leagues Under the Seas, his publisher said, oh, this is way too political. We want to be able to translate this work. And he had, at the time, he commented on Prussian aggression against the Poles, you know, country lines that and borders that are no longer relevant. But at the time, he tried to push, tried to be a voice for the unspoken. And I think in many ways this current production speaks to that. So if you're wanting to come see something that's an epic adventure, we got that for you. Family friendly, amazing circus arts. But we also have, I think, a really compelling story in terms of the Nemo, Captain Nemo, and what is his hidden secret, his dark secret, mm-hmm. and the Professor Aronnax, who we've actually, in the original play, this character was played by a male figure, and in our version, we discovered that she's a female, much like George Sand's using us as the pseudonym writer, and of the time. So there's something for everybody in this production that I'm just real, real happy with how it turned out.
You mentioned George Sand, which is very interesting because George Sand and Balzac and Victor Hugo had the same publisher as Jules Verne, Pierre Jules Hetzel.
Yeah.
Very interesting, okay. Very interesting.
This was, in fact, that was one of the, there were some letters that I read in the research that, well, first off, that we're not just adapting 20,000 Leagues Under the Seas. In doing some of the research, I was trying to understand who is this Nemo figure, and my co-writer Steve Pickering, he was helping me with workshops and pointed out that Nemo, there's a sequel, that Nemo appears in Mysterious Island.
Right.
And he tells us,
right.
And this was at the end of Jules Verne's writing career, and where he could tell whatever publisher what he wanted to be published, and he then put in a harrowing tale of Nemo and having the South Asian background, and that the character was revolutionary and a hero. And so we were able to, in many ways, restore 20,000 Leagues Under the Seas to tell that tale and to really give Captain Nemo a full picture as a three-dimensional anti-hero.
He had a reason for feeling the way he felt. He was an anti-colonialist whose family suffered because of what happened with the British imperialism that we saw in the world
That's
at the
right.
time.
And what I really love to bring out in a story is what's the right versus right debate.
Right.
You know, we can paint a picture of Nemo as and he certainly was a tyrant, an authoritarian. But at the same time, he felt that he was fighting for something that was right. And he felt that he was, in many ways, he had a choice. Do I try to make the world better? Or do I hide from that world and make a world anew and design an underwater world that is away from what he saw as oppressive forces.
Right.
And that, you know, that I think that's, for me, I would be happiest if audiences come away from this production not having that question answered, that they have to really think about both sides. To me, that's good theater right there.
Well, interesting, because I'm going to refer to a quote by Stella Adler. You're talking about the audience thinking, the great acting teacher, who said, the word theater comes from the Greeks. It means the seeing place. It is the place people come to see the truth about life and the social situation. It's exactly what you're doing, David.
That's right. You know, what's so interesting is the birth of Western theater. First off, because there's always this debate, well, is theater supposed to be entertainment or is it supposed to teach us something? Guess what? From its very birth, it was both.
Right.
Theater was a spiritual act among the Greeks that invented at least Western forms of theater. But it also, every time there was a play festival, the playwrights themselves had to stand in a crowd and shout out, hey, my play's playing at 2:30. Come see my play. It's about Medea. You know, and that literally had to happen. So from the very beginning, this was a story of the theater is a cathartic experience, but it also was about making sure that the seats are filled at the same time. And I love that debate is unanswered, that in fact it's always been 50-50.
And that's why it's so important that we understand the responsibility we have as parents and teachers and grandparents, that we have to introduce young people to the theater, because there's nothing they're going to feel better than after seeing a play or seeing a musical, no matter at what stage it is, that you come out of there and you're asking yourself, what just happened? Or I feel better about myself that I've just experienced an hour and a half or 2 hours of intellectual stimulation. And it engages your stimulation, engages your creativity. And
absolutely. One of the things that I try to do again and again at Looking Glass. You know, when we first formed back in the 80s, this was the age when MTV was first coming to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that as a threat, but at the same time emulated the excitement around it. We wanted our theater to be as good as an MTV video, as good as a Six Flags roller coaster ride, as good as an action adventure film. But we wanted to create it live. And I think that we've still maintained that core values. I know we have that for us, we know we're successful when it has that excitement that you can't believe this is happening live in front of you. And that's what 20,000 Leagues delivers for a solid 2 hours.
I think
it's a great time.
I think you've been successful in that. It's a work in progress, but you continue to be successful at it because of the way that you present the plays and musicals that you were presenting. I'm going to read a quote from Ray Bradbury, of course, the great science fiction writer who was from Illinois, Waukegan, in fact, who wrote Fahrenheit 451 and The Martian Chronicles and Dandelion Wine. He said, "We are all, in one way or another, the children of Jules Verne." And it's very true because we're experiencing what Jules Verne had the vision to experience. I'm going to read a little quote here from one of our town's exceptional critics. I'm going to embarrass you a little bit, but that's okay. It says, "But in 1870, the great Jules Verne imagined Captain Nemo as a misanthropic, Homeric wanderer, disdainful of human society, a proto-ecological warrior at the helm of a great submarine, probing the depths of the global oceans in an endless voyage and sinking warships every chance he gets. It's a major piece of looking glass art in all of the classic senses of that description. Visually exciting, replete with oodles of examples of theatrical storytelling, bursting with puppets, rigging, athletic humans, circus feats, intellectual probity, and emotional intelligence. It should be a big summer hit for Looking Glass and truly is a fine addition to the slate of city's family-friendly shows in the downtown area." It sure has been. It sure has been.
If you haven't seen this one, you need to see it, especially before school starts. Then you can say you were there when. I do feel that this is, if we need to get more young people into the theater, that's what's going to make theater survive. And theater has to constantly reinvent itself. And I think that by reaching to stories of the past and bringing them into the here and now, we're creating a new kind of theater. And I hope that some young people come and are inspired and create the next form of theater.
Well, that's why you keep doing what you're doing, and we try to keep getting the word out for what you're doing. What's next up for David Kirzner?
Well, I'm currently going to be teaching at University of Wisconsin in Madison.
Oh, good, good.
And I'm working on some new plays, so you'll be hearing about future seasons real soon here.
And I used to serve on the board of the Chicago College of the Performing Arts at Roosevelt University. Jim Gondry was the dean over there at the time, a great gentleman. And I think what you see here, and you've seen having been at DePaul and Northwestern and so forth, David, we have such a great group of young people who are going into theater, who have the ability to be able to perform in and around the Chicagoland area. And we have the venues here to do that. And we're very fortunate. You know, people call us a second city. I don't believe it because in theater, we're second to none. And you're a perfect example of that.
Absolutely. I one of my first university teaching gigs was at Roosevelt University. Love that place. And I love teaching in Chicago and have for many years. So it's great. I've been away from the Midwest for several years, and it's great to get back. So I'll wave at you as I drive through on 9094.
Inventive, collaborative, transformative Looking Glass Theater Company, recipient of the 2011 Regional Theater Tony Award, was founded in 1988 by 8 Northwestern University students. Now in its 30th season, Looking Glass is home to a multidisciplined ensemble of artists who create story-centered theatrical work that is physical, orally rich, and visually metaphoric. Looking Glass Theater Company announces an extension of 20,000 Leagues Under the Seas, adapted by David Kirzner and Alpha Slow from the books by Jules Verne, directed by ensemble member David Kirzner. Due to high ticket demand, additional dates through September 9th have been added. 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea plays at Looking Glass Theater Company, located inside Chicago's historic Water Tower Waterworks, 821 North Michigan at Pearson. This marks the second and final extension of the production. For information and tickets, 312-337-0665. On the line with us right now is David Kirzner. David, a pleasure chatting with you and very intellectually stimulating conversation. I very much enjoyed this.
Anytime. love talking to you about all things Jules Verne.
And look forward to the next thing you're presenting.
You'll be the first to hear.
Thank you, David.
Okay, talk to you.
Take care. David Kersner, the director of the award-winning 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and certainly another extension through September 9th. And David said, if you have younger family members and had a chance, bring them before it ends, because it's just a wonderful production, very imaginative. And I think going back to what we had talked about, that's what theater should do. It should stimulate and engage your imagination, stimulate and engage your creativity, stimulate and engage your intellect. And this play does that very well. It's at the Water Tower Works right at Michigan and Pearson. And again, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Looking Glass Theater, 312-337-0665. Well, let's enjoy a little summer music. Chad and Jeremy of Summer Song. We'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show.
Trees swaying in the summer breeze, showing off their silver leaves as we walked by. Soft kisses on a summer's day, laughing all our cares away, just you and I. Sweet, sleepy warmth of summer nights, gazing at the distant lights in the starry sky. They say that all good things must end someday. Autumn leaves must fall, but don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. And when the rain against my window pane, I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. They say that all good things must end someday. Autumn leaves must fall, but don't you know that it hurts me so to say goodbye to you? Wish you didn't have to go. No, 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 no. And when the rain beats against my window pane, I'll think of summer days again and dream of you. And dream of you.
Chad and Jeremy, a summer song, and we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. The City of Chicago's 60th annual Chicago Air and Water Show, presented by Shell Oil Products, will take place this August 18th and 19th along the lakefront from Fullerton to Oak Street, with North Avenue Beach serving as show center from 10 to 3 p.m. daily. Strong in tradition and one of the largest free admission events of its kind, the show headliners include the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds and the U.S. Army Parachute Team Golden Knights. The U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds have been astounding audiences since 1953 with their commanding presence and precision flying in their F-16 Fighting Falcons. As role models for men and women of all ages, the Thunderbirds are a select group of Air Force pilots who perform intricate and precise maneuvers, often approaching the speed of sound. The brave men and women of the U.S. Army Parachute Team Golden Knights and the U.S. Navy Leapfrogs will inspire spectators as they jump out of an aircraft 12,500 feet above the Earth's surface to a perfect beach landing on North Avenue Beach. To mark the 16th year of the popular event, the show will feature a wide variety of military and civilian aerial demonstration teams with daredevil pilots performing their stunts in the skies above Chicago. But I'll let my special guest tell us about those. And on the line with us right now is the award-winning pilot, United Airlines senior captain, honorary Chicagoan, one of the most beloved men in air travel, and now celebrating his, I hope I have this right, 32nd year as the voice of the 60th Annual Chicago Air and Water Show on Saturday, August 18th and Sunday, August 19th on Chicago's beautiful lakefront from Fullerton to Oak Street and all along the lake with the show center at North Avenue Beach, our good pal, Mr. Herbie Hunter. Herbie, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, Kevin, it's great to be back with you.
The tradition continues, my pal.
It does, and I tell you, I always, you know, I spend my summers in Chicago, and you know, it's. I hope the city's adopted me because I've adopted it.
Oh, very much so. You're honorary Chicago, as I said in my introduction, and continue to be so. And it wouldn't be the Air and Water Show without Herbie Hunter on the microphone.
You know, it's been a long time, hadn't it?
Is it 32 years? 32 years?
Back in 1988.
So 32 years. Wow, geez. I remember that. You were just in high school then.
That's right. Thank you. You're very kind.
Well, this year is going to be as much fun as ever. We have certainly a lot of activity. I'm going to let you tell people what's all about.
Okay. You know, this show started back in 1959 with Al Benedict, and of course you knew Al well.
Sure.
And it was a summer kids program for the kids down at Lakeshore Park.
The budget was $88 then.
Yes. $88 budget. Can you imagine that? I mean, you can't, you know, eat dinner hardly for that anymore. And it started as a fun day, and the only air act for the Lakeshore Park Air and Water Show was the United States Coast Guard Air Sea Rescue, back with us again this year, I might add, 60 consecutive years.
Wow.
So that was the only air act. And the next year, in 1960, we actually had the Thunderbirds. And you know the story about that, the little kid who asked Al, he said, "Hey, Mr. Benedict, why don't we get the Thunderbirds next year?" And it was a joke, but that turned into reality, and that was the kickoff for, you know, just the largest event of its kind in the world, and it's wonderful to even be a part of it.
Sure.
I'm glad to have Thunderbirds back this year.
Sure, sure. Tell us what they do. Now, they fly in formation, and you've said before, the wings are a foot or a foot and a half apart 18, from each other?
18 inches overlap, yeah.
I asked this question. What if they sneeze?
And you know, a lot of their flybys, they're classic, you know, four-ship formations. They're probably flying about 400 knots, so, you know, 450 miles an hour. But you'll see them go faster. You'll see them go slower. And it always amazes people when I point out that high alpha pass, or that really nose-high, slow-speed pass, is probably the most complicated they do. It's hard for a fast airplane to go slow.
Right. I know I asked this question. What happens when somebody sneezes?
I guess you hope it doesn't happen. You know, the airplanes are pretty stable. And, you know, I imagine if you just, you know, release the pressure on the stick, nothing happens at all. But, you know me, I was a big airplane driver. I haven't flown a fast airplane with a stick on it since my pilot training days back in 1971. Wow, that's a long time ago. And so, you know, big airplane guys, I had a wheel, and it was a little bit slower reacting time.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, Herb, because you've been flying for many, many, many years. You were such a successful captain with United Airlines for so many years, led the team at United Airlines, and you started out in Indiana.
I did. I was born and raised in Seymour, Indiana, a small-town boy raised by my grandmother, and I started dreaming of flying airplanes when I was 5 years old. And mm-hmm. So it's sort of a success story, and, you know, my company went through some tough times, bankruptcy days and loss of pay and pensions and stuff like that. But when you stop and look back, the thing that makes me proud is that I lived out my dream. And in so many ways, I mean, you know, I first flew in the Chicago Air and Water Show 40 years ago this summer.
Wow.
Flying co-pilot in a KC-135. The next year I flew in the left seat, and then in 88, you know, hiring. This has been just icing on the cake. The fact that I would be allowed for so many years to be involved with an event that was so special to so many people. And so, you know, my career with the airlines were great, but my military career, I'm just as proud of that. 22 years in the military and the last 16 with the Illinois Air National Guard, and then being a part of the Chicago Air and Water Show. I've had a life that, when I look back, you know, all I can say is I'm thankful.
Well, we're all the better for it. You know, and that brings up a good point. At one time when you started out, Herb, look at all the different airlines that were. Pan Am was such a great airline, and all the different airlines. And now you're, you know, you have a select few, and I mean Southwest, which is wasn't even around then, has been one of the most successful airlines. That's
been successful as a niche carrier, and yeah. You know, there years ago, boy, long before the bankruptcy started with you know, with Delta and United and just about everybody, US Air, which is now gone and into American, of course, one of our fine sponsors, American Airlines. They predicted this, that the costs and rising costs of maintenance and fuel and crews were going to force consolidation, and it did. And in some ways, it's easy to understand because, you know, any business is about making money, but I guess I'm one of the old-fashioned guys that that miss, you know, sort of dressing up to get on an airplane, and now you never know what you're going to see.
It's true.
And old carriers like Pan Am, which was just such a classic elite carrier, you know, fell by the wayside. And there's a part of me that you know, is sad about that. That was Pan Am was a great carrier. Of course, they were I think along with United Airlines, you know, so famous for flying the 747, Boeing 747 that I flew for my last 11 years. So, yeah, times have changed.
You know, they really have. And you bring up a good point. I remember taking all my kids to Florida when they were young. And it was an occasion. The trip itself was an occasion. You could order the food that you wanted. You'd have a child's meal, or you had a special meal that you could order. You'd get on the plane, and you would get dressed up. You wouldn't come on in your pajamas like people are walking on now or half naked. And the people that were on the plane, the service people on the plane, were always dressed to the T's. It was part of the vacation. And now you're just jumping on a plane to get there.
Yeah, it's disappointing. And actually, my last trip to Europe, I believe, was on a European carrier, and I say this only because you mentioned pajamas. There was actually one woman who was in the lobby, and I thought she looked a little strange, and when I started to pay attention, you know, before we got on the airplane, she was actually already in her pajamas. They were long-legged pajamas. There was nothing, but yeah. They were pajamas.
Yeah.
And she was dressed to get in her seat and go to sleep for 6 to 8 hours until we got to Europe, and I thought, you know, what have we come to?
But we digress here.
We digress.
But okay, so we have the U.S. Army Parachute Team Golden Knights and the U.S. Navy Leapfrogs. Always great to watch them.
Yeah, and the Golden Knights were actually in part of the first. They did jump in 1959. They weren't called the Golden Knights yet. I don't think they took that name until 1961. They were the U.S. Army Parachute Team. They were there. We're going to have the Leapfrogs, of course. And the thing that astounds me about these young men and women is that, you know, they perform for us, but they're all really soldiers. You know, the Leapfrogs are all Navy SEALs, and there's no harder training in the world than SEAL training. And so they're going to be here with us. We've got the Coast Guard back with the Air Sea Rescue, and they're out there 24/7, 365, allowing us to use the wonderful shorelines of Lake Michigan here in the city of Chicago. Coast Guard cutter is actually going to be our center boat. And we've got, but on the civilian side, we've got so many people too. We've got the force, which is Matt Chapman, Jack Knutson, Rob Holland, Bill Stein. They're going to fly four ship, and they're monoplanes, highly complex and advanced monoplanes. And those guys are so great to see. We'll see a couple of them fly solo routines. Rob Holland, reigning world champion, I think 3 years running, just one of the finest airshow performers ever been here. And of course, we talk about fine performers. You got to talk about Chicago favorite Sean Tucker, who I believe this is going to be his last year as a solo performer.
Really?
He's back with us here in Chicago. Susan Dacey and her Big Steerman, Big Red, and of course that takes us back to the old barnstorming days, the airplanes with a wing on the top and a wing on the bottom, and she'll be performing down there at North Avenue Beach, and the police department and the fire department will show what they can do with their helicopters and their boats out there on the water. So it's just going to be a fabulous, fabulous weekend.
I know Sean Tucker's one of your pals, and it's going to be sad to see him drop out of the show, but I'm sure he'll have people representing him, right?
Well, I think he's actually going to become part of a team.
Okay.
Sean is a very intelligent person. He understands, you know, he's not quite my age, but he's got a few years on him. You'd never know it when you see him because he's so thin and trim and keeps in fabulous shape. Mm-hmm. But I think he feels that, you know, his is a very on-the-edge performance. It has been over the years. And Maybe I'm imagining it, but it seems like he's toned it back just a little bit the last couple of years, and I think he just feels that, you know, a team act, which would be a little slower, a little more coordinated, is something that he would still feel comfortable doing, and I hope that that's the case, because the air show industry would certainly hate to lose Sean. He is just really a one-of-a-kind, and he's already decided to donate his Oracle biplane to the Smithsonian when this year's over. So that's really cool.
I guess the question is, Herbie, who replaces Sean Tucker? Who replaces, you know, the Dave Dacys and the people who have made aviation their livelihood?
There are, you know, I think when you add it with ability, there are a lot of people with incredible ability. They were talking on the golf, watching golf last weekend, how tough it is for someone to do what maybe Tiger Woods did back in 2000, 2001, 2002, when he was winning everything. And, of course, you had a lot of great golfers competing against him, but there were just a handful. Now, the young people are also good. It's like the statistics in baseball. You know, everybody does everything. Everybody hits it farther, hits it harder, runs faster. And so I think that ability-wise, I mean, you know, Rob Holland, there's not a better pilot in the world than Rob Holland right now. I think the thing with Sean is he has such an unusual personality. You meet him and shake his hand, and it's like you've known him your whole life. He's just a very, very unique individual. And I think that, you know, these people come along, but, I, you know, one guy who's just got an incredible personality right now, he's maybe not as flashy, maybe he's not as aggressive as Sean, but Bill Stein. Bill Stein is an incredible pilot, and he's got a wonderful personality. He doesn't spend as much time full-time on the air show circuit as he's one of the best instructors, acrobatic instructors in the world today. And Bill Stein is just, we are so proud to have Bill back this year, and he's just one of my favorite people, too. Dave Dacy, you know, going back to the old days with the big old Barnstorming Stearman, it's hard to replace somebody like that who does something with an older airplane and seems to fit the bill. You see Dave standing next to his steerman. He looks like he fits in that airplane. Like that's what he should be doing.
Sure.
Wing walking, you just don't see much of it anymore. It's almost gone. Tony Kazian, of course, his dad was a wing walker, Johnny Kazian, in so many movies, a stuntman. And, you know, you don't see that. So I guess as time goes on, you do lose a little bit. You know, some things just go away, and that's just the way it is.
How many of the air shows are around the United States? Are there still quite a few?
Oh, my goodness. You know, Chicago is unusual in that it's so big, but there are air shows around the United States every weekend.
Really?
Starting in maybe the end of March through, I think, right up till the first weekend in November. I think the season sort of ends first weekend in November.
No kidding.
So, you know, there are a lot of air shows. And, in fact, I think, and this was 2 or 3 years ago, and everybody assumes that auto racing is the number two attended sport next to Major League Baseball, which is obviously number one. So many teams, so many games. So there's so many people that actually go overseas. But I read about 3 years ago that, you know, air shows were actually number two, at least a few years ago, in attendance because – you usually go as a family. It's a family attended, you know, weekend, an event. And it's funny, airplanes, you know, everybody loves airplanes. It brings out the kid in all of us. You, me, everybody. And
sure.
So people ask me, how can I still be so excited about it? Well, the crowd makes me excited about it because they love the airplanes. And, you know, I'm just there to try to enhance what they're seeing. You know, the airplanes and the pilots in them, they're the stars. And the key is for me to make people understand what makes them tick, what they're doing, what they're seeing. Because sometimes what you're seeing isn't as obvious as what it takes to get there. So, you know.
And you do that so very well. For 32 years you've been doing it so very well. And you still have that excitement and enthusiasm. You can hear it in your voice. You can hear it the way you present things, Herb. It wouldn't be the same without you.
Well, thank you, sir. It's very kind of you. And I, you know, anybody's replaceable, and I know my time will come to an end here. You know, I can't believe it, and I'm going to say this out loud, but, you know, I'll be 69 next month, and that's, I quite honestly never thought I'd live this long. And here I'm still in pretty good physical condition, but I work at that, too.
Sure.
I work at staying healthy and staying in shape. And I'll tell you, I'm down to, this year I only did two shows, but you know, I'll do Chicago as long as they'll have me back. I love it. And our team, I love being a part of the team. You know, Rudy so well. Rudy runs the team. But, you know, people on our team, like Mike Bandini, our air boss, and Rich Byrne, our scheduler, and Tommy Jansen working with ATC, and Jerry Wyatt, our safety guy, you know, we just work together. We know what each other's going to do, and we work as a team, and I'm just really, really proud to be part of that team.
Well, it's fun to have you, and Mary May tells me now we have a special guest that's going to drop in on the Air and Water Show. That's Rhymefest is going to be jumping out of the plane, too.
Right, right, right. You know, someday I'm going to do that.
Well, when you do it, I'll do it with you.
Okay. All right.
You know, we've had, who else we have? We've had Bill Murray's done it, Vince Vaughn's done it, some people. And this year, Rhymefest is doing
it. There are stories behind the scenes, which I won't share with the crowd, where some of those people almost didn't jump. and, of course, one of them, you know, there was no question, is Bill Murray. I mean, you just couldn't hardly keep him out of the airplane. I've never seen, I've got to be frank with you, in my, and I was doing some math here. This is my 31st year as the voice of the show. 40 years in it, 31 at the mic as the voice. In all of my years, I have never seen more excitement on the stage and around the stage than when Bill Murray jumped in. I want to tell you, for the next 10 minutes, nobody was watching the air show. They were all watching Bill. And I didn't even get to meet him because I was busy. I was up on the stage. Boy, he really brought a lot of excitement. Everybody loves Bill Murray.
Well, you know, it's always a great great weekend, and certainly this weekend will be a great weekend. The weather's going to be terrific, and you're on the mic, and it's always good. This marks the 60th anniversary of the Chicago Air and Water Show, strong in tradition and assured the lofty position as one of the world's premier aviation events. From simple beginning as part of a family day celebration in 1959, the show has grown to the oldest and largest free admission air and water exhibition in the United States, with audience members numbers reaching nearly 2.5 million annually. It is one of the largest spectator events in the world. The City of Chicago's 60th annual Chicago Air and Water Show, presented by Shell Oil Products, will take place this August 18th and 19th along the lakefront from Fullerton Oak Street, with North Avenue Beach serving as show center from 10 to 3 daily. Strong in tradition and one of the largest free admission events of its kind. The show headliners include the U.S. Air Force Thunderbirds, the U.S. Army Parachute Team Golden Knights, and one of the great headliners, Mr. Herbie Hunter, the voice of the 60th annual Chicago Air and Water Show. Always a pleasure, my pal. How's your bride? Is she doing well?
She's doing really well. She's babysitting today for her nieces and nephews. That's what she spends most of the summer doing. She loves it.
Will you tell her I said hello and give her my best?
Thank you sincerely for having me on your program. It's something I look forward to every year.
As do I, my pal. Good luck, and we'll look forward to seeing you soon.
Take care.
Thanks,
bye.
Herbie. Herbie Hunter, what a fine gentleman, a good friend for many, many years, and now celebrating his 31st year on the mic, and the 60th annual Chicago Air and Water Show, presented by Shell Oil Products, this Saturday and Sunday on the lakefront from Oak Street Beach, Fullerton, North Avenue Beach, kind of the center. For information, 312-744-0576. Stop down with 2.5 million of your closest friends, and you'll have a great, great time. One of my favorite summer songs from Chad and Jeremy, Distant Shores, and we'll be back on the Kevin Moore Show.
Sweet, soft summer nights, dancing shadows in the starry light. For me to follow, and we kissed on distant shores. Long quiet hours of play, sounds of tomorrow. Love came for me to follow, and we kissed on distant shores. The careful glance. silence of children playing. Raindrops fall as if they're saying quiet thoughts of you, caressed by time. The breeze of summer's come, whispered memories as nights grow long.
Kissed on Distant Shores, Chad and Jeremy. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guest, David Kirzner, the director of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea from the books of Jules Verne, now playing at the Looking Glass Theater. Have been extended until September 9th at the historic Water Tower Waterworks, 821 North Michigan at Pearson. For information, 312-337-0665. Don't miss this with the entire family. And our good pal Herbie Hunter, the voice for the 31st time of the 60th annual Chicago Air and Water Show, Saturday, August 18th and Sunday, August 19th. Chicago's beautiful lakefront from Fullerton to North Avenue to Oak Street. A great weekend in the city. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have at the very least done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Enjoy your summer day.
And if we know we're always changing, why should it be the same? And tell me how, year after year, you're sure your heart will fall apart. Time you hear her name. I know the way I feel for you. It's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. In your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. If we can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends. If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, any luck then I suppose. The music The music